From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour goes back to the 2013 state budget process. That's when Governor Andrew Cuomo and the state legislature decided to look ahead, and they planned to give some taxpayers, some, a rebate check. Those checks arrived in the mail last week, $350 apiece if you're in the family category as defined by the state. We'll explain. The governor has said it's about letting taxpayers keep more of their money, but some political leaders have called it a bribe, much too close to Election Day to be taken seriously. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think? We want to look at the policy side. Is there a stimulative effect for New York's economy? What tends to work and what doesn't? We'll hear from some of the political leaders in just a moment, and we welcome to the program Erica Rosenberg, the Associate Director of the Center for Governmental Research here in Rochester. Erica, nice to see you.
Thank you.
We have Andrea Hickerson here as well. She's an RIT professor of journalism in the School of Communications. Andrea, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Before I get to even the comments of the governor, let me ask both of you. Is it as blatantly political as it seems, or are we going to discover some virtuous aspect of this that we didn't realize? I'm going to start with Erica, because you deal with the tax policy side.
Sure. So I think the giveaway is that it's a check this year and not next year or the year after, when this money will still, the idea is, flow to taxpayers, but in the form of tax credits. So this year, in the wonderful month of October or late September, we're getting these checks from the state while we have a governor's race. In the upcoming year, that's not the case. So while I think it's very appealing to a lot of people, this notion of putting money into taxpayers' pockets, I think it's a political game that's been played in the state for quite a long time, going back to at least 2006, right? And I think George Pataki was our first governor to sort of figure that out, that this would be a good thing to do.
And I haven't I haven't called every state house to find out what every state's done. This can't be the only state in the country that sends checks this close to an election, but I haven't found a whole lot others from some taxpayer watchdog groups, et cetera. I haven't found a whole lot of others that are sending it this close to an election.
Right. Well, we're special in New York in a lot of ways, and I think this is perhaps one of them. I mean, that doesn't totally surprise me. We usually, when we go hunting for other sort of examples of dysfunction or corruption on a parallel with our state, we often look to Illinois. So I don't know if you checked Illinois. California is another one where they may be playing similar kinds of games. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be surprised if we stick out a little bit here, as you've seemed to have found.
All right, Andrea Hickerson, when you look at this on the journalistic side, what's the appropriate tone? Does this come to you in the same sort of fashion? Do you view this as kind of blatantly political or much more functional than perhaps we're thinking?
I think I'm skeptical that the average person is aware of the political context in which this is coming out, particularly this election season where the gubernatorial campaign didn't really pick up until the beginning of October. So while I think those questions are there, I'm skeptical that the average person is making them, which makes the role of journalists, I think, even more important in this context.
Okay. So let's hear from some political leaders. And then if you want to join the program as well, it's toll free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. We're 263-WXXI, 263-9994 right here in Rochester. If you are wondering about why you did not get a rebate check that we're talking about, we'll explain the parameters that the state set coming up here. But let's start with a conversation I had earlier this morning. This is with New York State Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb, a Republican. He's talking about his distaste for this particular rebate check.
I think it's disingenuous. If we've got money to burn, so to speak, from a New York State budget, we shouldn't collect the tax money in the first place. And quite frankly, there's a lot of people much more in need of help financially than the people that are receiving this check. You know, you're dealing with low-income families. You're dealing with seniors on fixed incomes. These folks need help a lot more than the group that is targeted for this check, which obviously conveniently has arrived, 28, 29 days before Election Day.
Do you have any idea what the cost to the state is to mail the checks out? And by that I mean, if people are going to keep $350 more of their own money, it obviously costs more to give it to the state and for the state to give it back to you eventually. But do we know how much this program is costing the state to administer?
I think the number I heard, Evan, is between $1.5 million and $2 million, the cost of postage and administration of the tax rebate. And as I mentioned earlier, the actual cost of the program itself, the total cost of the rebates over the life of the program, is going to be over $400 million. And, again, that's quite a bit of chunk of money that quite frankly, as I said earlier, we shouldn't have collected it in the first place, let the money stay in the taxpayers' hands so that they can spend it. Everybody can spend their money, and not just a select chosen few.
Assemblyman Kolb, can you walk our listeners through the timing of this? I mean, when did this rebate get passed by the state legislature, and could it have been administered at another time not so close to the election?
Yes, actually, this was established in the 2013-2014 state budget, and we're in the midst of right now the 2014-2015 state budget. So it was done last budget cycle. It was established for 3 years, 2014, obviously the year we're in, 2015, and 2016. But certainly as the program goes forward, this year is the only year you're going to get a $350 rebate check for those that are eligible. What's remarkable in this whole program, again, is in 2015 and 2016, the $350 will not be issued as a check, but taxpayers will have to claim it as a tax credit on their income tax return. So isn't it remarkable that in an election year you're going to get a check that you see, that you touch, that you feel, but the other 2 years in the non-election year, you're going to have to actually apply for an income tax credit on your income tax return. This was an election year gambit, nothing more than that. And again, when you're selecting winners and losers as far as taxpayers, there's a lot of people that have paid taxes over the years that now their kids are off to college. They don't get a break. Anybody that's got kids in college, you just have to have a child, at least one child at home. Doesn't do anything to help our seniors. And again, this money's collected from all taxpayers across the state, including businesses, and that's why I think that this is just a sham on behalf of those that voted for it.
What is your understanding of possible stimulative effect? I mean, those who defend this say, number one, people should keep more of their own money, and number two, when they get sort of this windfall, that it could have a stimulative effect.
Certainly, is that possible that someone's going to take $350 and go out and spend it, on a family basis? Is that possible? Sure. Some people might throw it in the savings account. It's hard to say. Do I think it's, you know, if you look at the annual impact, it's roughly $135 million over the course of a given year. And again, that's if everybody takes the $350 and goes out and spends it on even consumables. And who's to know what people are going to do? But is that going to be a stimulus to the economy? No. And, you know, even people that I've talked to, you know, friends have jokingly said, hey, Brian, thanks for the $350 check. And, of course, my first response is, I'm sorry, I didn't vote for it, you know, in the spirit of full disclosure. But, you know, all the New York State taxpayers paid for this. And so hopefully you will go spend it. So it's, you know, someone will say, yeah, it's $125, $135 million in the economy, hopefully. But again, I don't, you know, there's a lot better ways for the economy to be stimulated versus a selected rebate program.
That's Assemblyman Brian Kolb, the minority leader. Let's hear now from Joe Morelli, the majority leader. He was on this program a couple of months ago, and I had a chance to ask him about the checks that would be coming in October, end of September, October. And this is what Democrat Joe Morelli said about those same rebate checks.
Last year, over our objections in the Assembly, the Senate insisted on a $350 check to be paid out this fall as a part of last year's budget deal. And, you know, the sending of checks in the mail, but look, it's not dissimilar than when you get a tax refund from the government. It says you overpaid. Here we're going to send you the check. I suppose they could just give you a credit against future taxes.
They look at the timing and they say.
Yeah. No, I understand it. And if I had my druthers, I probably wouldn't have designed it that way, but I'm one voice. And as I said at the outset, you know, budgets are compromises, and this is the way enough members wanted to do it, and the governor wanted to do it.
So that's the Assemblyman Joe Morelli, the majority leader, saying that it was the Senate and the governor who really pushed for the tax rebate to happen at this time. Here's a statement from the governor. Again, he hasn't been on this program yet, but here's a statement from Rich Ezzopardi, who's a spokesman for Andrew Cuomo. Quote, "This much-needed relief for families is one of many steps taken by Governor Cuomo to control and reduce taxes. As the governor has repeatedly said, New York has no future as the high-tax capital of the world," end quote. So there you are. You've seen the landscape. I've already seen your comments rolling in on Twitter. We're going to get to some of those. And let me also sort of put a strange little plea out there for anybody who really likes these rebate checks. I'd really like to hear from you, because I'm not hearing from people so far who think this is a great idea, even people who were given the checks. But maybe I'm missing something, Erica.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You finally found someone to sort of defend it a little bit in the Governor Cuomo spokesperson, right? We heard from the two legislators, neither one of whom really wanted to take credit for this, at least not to you, which I can certainly understand. So a couple things I was thinking while we were listening to the comments, and one is that question about whether there can be an economic, you know, some stimulation of the economy out of this. The size of the New York State economy is $1 trillion. So this program that we're talking about, plus another one yet to come, which I think we'll touch on later, $750 million in total expected to go out to taxpayers, 0.07% of the overall state economy. That's what that represents. So could it have a stimulative effect? Yes, it's going to. It would be very, very tiny. The other kind of broad question I'd like to just throw out there is, you know, this is all predicated on the notion that the state can afford this. And one of the things I think about is our debt burden. You know, we have $55, $56, $57 billion in outstanding debt. We're paying debt service of $3 billion a year to service that debt. If we really do have some surplus and we really do have some windfalls, which I think is the case, certainly some of these bank settlements have added to the state's coffers tremendously, why don't we think about paying down some of that debt? I mean, that's what a responsible household would do, right? So that, so I sort of question that basic premise, too, of whether the state can really afford to do this.
Andrea Hickerson, when you talk to the future journalists of the world and they're seeing this landscape, again, the default position a lot of people feel is cynicism about this, and that's not a very healthy feeling, but it's easy to look at this and feel that way. But do you tell journalists you've got to gear that back and let the public decide? I mean, what's the appropriate tone here?
Yeah, I think it's tricky to kind of balance that notion of impartiality. And I think that's exactly what the Cuomo administration has framed this as, is, look, we just gave you a check. It doesn't even have our name on it. You know, don't ask questions. And I think that's where journalists have to really start to ask those questions and provide that context, like Erica just added about, you know, what is this really going to do? Is this, did we spend more money in sending it back and through the postage? And so I think getting them to see beyond that. And then I think social media also can help journalists, because they don't want to appear like they're being partial by asking questions and being overly critical of it. And so you can now, through social media, get the public to kind of ask those questions for you, which I think is particularly important because now we see politicians less willing to interact with journalists. And so we need to find other ways to hold them accountable than through one-on-one interviews or a press conference or even a debate.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. Our listeners will know that there are a number of political leaders who have and have not appeared on, for example, for this program. Still waiting to have, for example, Rich Funke, who's running for Senate, haven't had a chance to have him on, but we hope to have him on soon. Governor Cuomo's not come on this program. He doesn't do a lot of one-on-one interviews. It's just sort of that's the MO that they've chosen. So, but they have invitations, and again, we hope to continue that conversation. Before we get back to the policy side, let's grab a phone call. This is Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes. Hi. Hi. Yeah. The issue about the $300 and whatever check there. You know, it's clearly, if not, you know, literally intended to be kind of a smile and be happy and vote for me piece. It has that effect. I think, you know, what is really needed. I mean, you talk about journalists and public in general as well. Is that you need to be able to analyze the situation in terms of, you know, New York State has a huge gap between the have and have nots. It's been, you know, documented all over the place. And some of these issues are also part of the national dialogue. So what do you do with that? That's a more important issue. In addition to having options for jobs, which of course is critical, the other thing is a return to progressive taxing. Most people probably think progressive income taxing is, you know, still fine and all that, but it isn't. It's been a tremendous decline in using progressive income tax, which, of course, should be taxing the most wealthy. If we did that in New York and we did also something to take the money that comes from stock transfer taxes on Wall Street to put that into a back to the public and services and things that people need, schools and all that, then that would have more of an effect than giving someone or people, as was pointed out, some of whom may not even really need it, $300+. That doesn't go very far. It doesn't have the same effect. And there are what also is disturbing is there are candidates running for office the Green Party is one that stands out, that has these proposals. And they need to be connected to its election time. They need to be connected to what people can have for options to elect people. That
all right, Bonnie, let me jump in and say that next week, Howie Hawkins will be on this program. He's running for governor as the candidate in the Green Party. And I think what Bonnie is talking about is what kind of tax policy is really effective. We're going to be getting in more of that as we go throughout the hour. I want to clear up a couple of questions that have already come in online as regarding why certain people did and didn't get this check. So here are the parameters. This $350 check that came from the state, the tax rebate, it was mailed out over the last really week to 10 days now for anyone who claimed at least one child under the age of 17 on their 2012 tax return and whose adjusted gross income was between $40,000 and $300,000. So one child under age 17 on the 2012 return, and then $40,000 and $300,000 is the range. More than a million checks went out. So that still is not the majority of New York taxpayers.
Right.
And let me also read a few comments here from – we have a deluge of comments, I have to be honest, from people who are not happy about this, mm-hmm. even though some people who received them. And then I also want to try to – I'm going to really try to get all sides of this. Jared writes, I think it's blank that since we don't have kids, we didn't get it. I mean, how do we define a family? What year is this? Kevin says, this feels like a blatant bribe by the governor, and even worse, it is a blank to non-breeders. I guess I'm worth less since my wife and I don't have kids. Mm-hmm. Diane says, we don't get the rebate. No kids that use schools or other resources, so apparently we deserve to pay more. That's ridiculous. DVH Online says, I have a family that's grown and a grand family of potential taxpayers, but I get nothing, so now I'm turning around as a Dem to vote for Astorino. Joanne says, I still don't understand why families with adjusted gross incomes up to $200,000, and actually $300,000, right. receive this, but single couples who make much less and still pay taxes get nothing. They should have been based on income, not parental status. They already get a tax break for their children. Laura writes, it's a ploy to purchase votes with my own money and won't work on me. So those are all the comments that have come in so far.
So if I can just jump
yes.
in, I think this anger is understandable given the way that the program was rolled out. And it's not very different, I don't think, than how Governor Pataki and others who may have used it have done it. But the problem is, you know, we've said some people are getting money. We haven't really explained why it's targeted to the extent that it is targeted. And there's a lot of...
You say we haven't explained. You think the state has
correct.
Not explained it well?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, not in what I've seen. Maybe somebody else has seen it. It doesn't sound like it, though. So, yeah, why is it people with kids? And then even more than that, what are the policy objectives of this policy? If we're trying to help people with kids, why is this the best way to do it? You know, and if we're trying to help people with kids, you know, there's a lot of criticism out there about the income levels at which we're having this go up to. Now, downstate, a family earning $300,000, many of them will tell you that that's not a lot to live on downstate. But still, I think there's certainly a lot of merit to the criticisms around who are we trying to help? Why are we trying to help them? And then, you know, just a huge amount of questions that we can ask over, is this the best way? So if we want to help families with kids and we want to maybe think about targeting those with low incomes, that's certainly an argument a lot of people would make. You know, why don't we talk about other things? Why don't we talk about child care subsidies? Why don't we talk about the quality of the schools that kids are going to? Why don't we talk about access to health services? I mean, I think that the way it's been approached has really set the stage for a lot of this anger.
What about one of your colleagues, Kent Gardner, always talks about the earned income tax credit. Do you mm-hmm. agree that that's more efficient?
Certainly is targeted for low-income working poor, and there's a lot of evidence out there that it's kept a lot of people out of poverty. So yes, that you know that's been a program that's been very effective. It's one that we offer at the state level. It's one that we could enhance at the state level. So certainly I think that is an option that should be considered.
All right, but here's Barbara on Twitter says, this rebate only comes if your municipality exceeds the property tax cap, correct? And the answer is no. We're talking about two separate things.
Right.
The family tax rebate is one thing, the $350 that we just described. And then regarding the property tax cap, it's a separate rebate. We're going to be talking about that in a moment. But Barbara says, stop painting this as a sham rebate. Explain the truth. And then she says, turning you off for imbalanced reporting. I take all criticisms to heart.
Right.
But that one of the reasons we wanted to play comments from both Brian Kolb, the Republican Minority Leader, Joe Morelli, the Majority Leader, and also try to get comment from the governor's office, which we got a statement. was because we're trying to understand the state motivation here
mm-hmm.
for a program that was created 18 months ago but is only rolling out now just weeks before Election Day. Right. I'm not trying to tinge it with cynicism. But again, right. Andrea, this comes back to me. She's saying this is an imbalanced reporting. Mm-hmm. So is that a fair criticism?
No, I think there's a lot of questions out there. And I think Erica's questions about the state hasn't really done a good job explaining this is really important. And that's something that we as journalists can try to do as much as they'll let us. But again, Cuomo's not responding to this. So we're left to kind of fill in the gaps and wonder why it's happening, why it's rolling out this way. And there's a lot of legitimate questions. One thing that I've been struck by is the labeling it as a family rebate. And obviously, through my comments there, is that that's rubbing people the wrong way. And you kind of have to wonder about that labeling. And it, you know, Cuomo's positioned himself as a progressive on social issues, but yet in this sense, families being defined a very narrow way, that why are they calling that way? It seems to me to play into a different type of rhetorical strategy that might appeal to the family values voters. It's hard to be against a family, if you will, just like it's hard to be against education.
I think that's an interesting point. And that's Jared's point there when he says, what year is this? You know, so narrowly defining a family, having to have a child a certain age, et cetera.
But I mean, we can certainly say that Governor Cuomo is correct when he says we have a high tax climate and that there's a lot of evidence to support the fact that that has hurt our economy and that that can be a drag on our job growth rate and that there is a basis, a political basis and even a policy basis for, you know, the state wanting to do what it can to reduce the tax burden. And the governor has tried to work that through many of his policies. I mean, we're going to talk more about the second rebate, but the property tax cap is certainly something that he put in place a couple of years ago to try to hold down local property taxes. I mean, it is consistent with a real concern out there that people have and a real desire, I think, to address that concern and to improve the economic climate in our state. So there is, you know, it's not all bad. No.
No, but are there any economists or any serious advisors who behind closed doors would tell Andrew Cuomo, if he said, look, I want to do the most efficient thing I can do to help people who are overtaxed, would any of them say, here's the parameters, send checks three, four weeks before Election Day in one chunk?
No, I would assume that the advice along the lines of being most efficient would be to reduce withholding and to do something, you know, so that people kept more of their money in their paychecks, and then to do something on the rates, reduce those perhaps temporarily even a little bit so that people didn't then have to, when they filed their taxes, give all that money back. I think one of the things that makes that difficult is that this is a relatively small amount. A small amount of money. So reducing the withholding, reducing the rates probably only makes sense if you're talking about a bigger change than $350 million or so for this particular program, $750 million if we look at both the programs.
Okay. See, but you see, Andrea,
yes.
On the when you cover something, mm-hmm. this goes back to the question of it is sexier and easier to say we're giving $350 checks right. to a million households,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to everything Erica just said about withholding and why it's more efficient.
Blah, 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 blah.
Sure. Right.
Sure.
So it may be an easier message.
Yeah, it's evidence, right? It says, you know, I'm working to reduce taxes. And by the way, here's your reminder in the mail. I think it's worth pointing out, though, that Cuomo isn't the first person to do this.
Right.
We've mentioned that already.
Right.
Pataki did this. And then my understanding is that when he did, his name was on the check. And he did credit himself for this. And Cuomo wasn't right. doing that, but this didn't originate with him.
Right.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair point. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember 10 years ago covering Congressman Tom Reynolds, a Republican mm-hmm. who was from Clarence out near Buffalo. And he would show up with, most members of Congress engage in pork barrel spending.
Right.
But Tom had a habit of showing up with enormous oversized checks
oh, yeah.
with his huge signature
sure.
on it. And one day I asked the Greece Public Library, they got $100,000 for new library tags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I asked, where did the money come from? And I was told by the Greece Public Library, we were told it was a gift from the congressman.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I don't
it's
think...
It's funny that you mentioned pork barrel spending, because when I was thinking about this a little bit last night, I was actually thinking this is sort of like micro-level pork barrel spending, really. You know, it's like not just for your legislator mm-hmm. for the causes in your community. Now we're just going to directly give it to you.
Well, but to Andrew's point there, the governor's not putting his name on huge checks here. He's not even putting his names on these small actual checks that show up in the mail. Mm-hmm.
And that was highly criticized in the past, and I think we can assume that that was part of the decision. I guess the other thing I'll say about politicians is we do want politicians to be responsive to voters. We do want politicians to be thinking about what people are concerned about, what they would like to see change. And so some of this where we do these blanket criticisms of, oh, that's so political, it's disgusting. Yes, it can feel that way. But on the other hand, do we want politicians that aren't paying any attention to what we're concerned about and what we're clamoring about? No, we don't. And I think that, as a result, we get some of these things.
All right, let me grab another call. This is Christina in Rochester. Go ahead, Christina.
Hi there. I just want to say I am a Democrat, and I have been a lifelong Democrat, but I'm having a hard time deciding whether I am going to vote for Mr. Cuomo in the general election. I see this $350 as just a naked attempt to get a certain demographic to vote for him. I'm a person who has an adult child and a grandchild, so I would not qualify for this. So there's even an element of age discrimination. In any case, I am very disappointed in him and the closed aspect of his government, mm-hmm. and I may just end up voting for Howie Hawkins because he makes a lot of sense. More to send a message to the governor that he really needs to be truly more responsible and far less overtly political.
Well, Christina, thanks for the call. Again, Howie Hawkins will be on this program next week, and you can hear his comments at length on this and many other issues. But Andrea, when it comes to, she mentioned the closed aspect of the Cuomo administration. Mm-hmm. Yesterday we talked to Scott Waldman, a reporter for Capital New York, who wrote a long and exclusive story on the Cuomo administration's handling of the health study regarding hydrofracking. And he found them to be just about as closed as any administration he's ever covered. And when it comes to reporters, I would love for the governor to join us in this conversation today. Look, this is our mentality behind the rebate checks and the timing. We don't think it's political, and here's why. But we often don't get that opportunity. How often? But we also don't want to beat that drum too much. And, he has no responsibility to come on my program. I'm not entitled to an interview with the governor. So I just want our listeners to know we attempt to do that. What's the balance there for the journalists who want to cover it, but don't want to look like we're whining when they won't talk. What I mean?
Right. I think part of it is transparency. And I think that's why people are frustrated with Cuomo. And I think that's the best way for journalists to deal with an issue like this, like you're saying. We invited him on. We're giving him this opportunity to talk. And I think it's important for journalists to relay that to the audience, because I know when I show my students things, they'll say, oh, that's so biased because so-and-so is not included in it. And sometimes that's true. It appears that way. But it's that, a party wouldn't commit to being part of that interview. It's difficult. How do they make that impartiality, but, ask the right questions? And unfortunately, I think there's a really bad dynamic right now, maybe worse than ever, between journalists and politicians. And the Obama administration has been criticized for this, too, as being very closed off and very not willing to go off the cuff. And Joe Biden gets in trouble, the few times that he makes comments like that, it becomes news. And so we just have a really bad dynamic. People are worried about being caught and getting that gaffe and that becoming an internet meme and that running the campaign. And so it seems as if politicians have just decided, well, I'm just going to sit back and see what happens and allow someone else to screw up. So I'm not caught on tape doing it.
It's interesting. There are more ways to communicate than ever before, and yet there's more concern about those platforms offering gaffe opportunities. And therefore, we're seeing maybe a little more closure than ever before. It is an interesting dynamic. We're talking about tax policy, the rebate checks that went out. You might have received one recently from New York State. Erica Rosenberg is here. She's the Associate Director of the Center for Governmental Research. Andrea Hickerson is an RIT Professor of Journalism in the School of Communications. Short break, and we're going to come back and clear up what the next round of rebate checks is coming and what the analysts think about that and what you ought to know about what may be coming your way next from New York State and why when it comes to the timing. And then we'll also talk about, again, policy. We've had questions on the difference between a rebate check and a tax credit and a tax cut. What do they generally like better? What do they think is most effective? All those questions and your comments as well coming up on member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, who is Narendra Modi? The new Prime Minister of India is coming off a whirlwind tour of the United States, but polls show that most Americans have still never heard of him. Modi holds great power in helping chart the course of world economic relations, pollution, equality, global warming, and more. Our panel discusses the Modi agenda next hour.
Most food is grown on farms, but pine nuts come from pine forests, distant pine forests.
You go into the forest and you pick up cones from the ground and then transport them to wherever they're being crushed to extract the nuts.
A bountiful harvest that's there for the gathering later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4.
All right, welcome back to Connections. And during our brief break here, Andrea Hickerson from RIT and I were having an interesting conversation about the fact that the feedback we're getting, even from families who received this $350 rebate check, indicates that they don't necessarily view it very favorably. And so your observation was, if this is a political gimmick, it may not be that effective, right?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, even in my own social media feed, you know, I'll see someone say, I'm going to deposit my bribe check or something like that. So even though they're taking it, there's a lot of people that you're having a hard time finding someone to speak in support of it. And I think one thing that strikes me as interesting about this is the people that tend to vote tend to be older people. They have higher rates of turnout, and those are not the people who are benefiting from this check at all. So even the people that might be really happy about it are not might not actually show up to the polls on election day.
Okay, but here's what that made me think of. Certainly every 4 years, but we are always talking about the fact that voters don't like negative ads. Voters recoil at all the negative ads. Mm-hmm. And yet most of the research indicates that you can say it, but negative ads still work. And that's why they keep doing it. I mean, they test this stuff. They know it works. Is this another case where people say, that $350 rebate check's going to get you nowhere with me, and yet maybe it works, Andrea?
Well, the other point I would add in is that, you know, for the people who are kind of tuned out to this whole conversation, who don't follow state government, which, by the way, is a sizable portion of the population, you know, I don't know that they feel negative or cynical about this at all. And while they might not have that conscious thought like, oh, thank you, Governor Cuomo, you'll have my vote at the poll, I mean, they might have a reaction to getting a check like, oh, I didn't know this was coming, and this is a very pleasant surprise, and it might give them kind of a generally more favorable disposition towards state government. So I think, you know, we have this informed slice of the population that's feeling very cynical about this, but I don't know how representative that is of everybody.
Okay. Again, the $350 rebate checks that went out to New York residents who claimed at least one child under the age of 17 on their 2012 tax return and whose adjusted gross income was between $40,000 and $300,000. $40,000, is that sort of an arbitrary? Is there any reason for that line that you know of, Erica?
I do not. And I was wondering why it was there at all and why you wouldn't want to help folks with less income than that who had kids. But I haven't given any thought or tried to research what that's all about, so I don't know.
Okay. And again, we've only been able to get sort of broad comments from the governor's office through mm-hmm. a spokesperson. But there is another round coming next month. Next month, the state will send out property tax rebate checks, not the same as the family rebate. Family tax rebates that just went out. The property tax rebate checks are going to go to homeowners in communities whose school districts stayed below the state's new tax cap. And that's most of them. So eligible taxpayers will receive the checks automatically. And again, the governor's office saying this is a part of a broader plan to keep taxes in check in New York State. Erica?
Right.
Thoughts on this?
Well, just it's you know, another way the governor is trying to basically persuade school districts to stay under the tax cap. And of course, the way it rolls out in future years is that this rebate check is only going to go to taxpayers in school districts and local governments that not only stay under the cap, but can show that they're looking at and actually implementing some kind of shared services or consolidation efforts to reduce the tax levy, I think by 1% or something like that. So, I mean, it's more from the governor on holding down local property taxes, which I think is a appealing and popular. What's, I think, part of where it may be coming from is that, you know, we've had the tax cap in place for a few years now, and it's getting harder and harder for local governments and school districts to stay under it. And one of the reasons for that is because some of the kind of fundamental rules of the game have not changed. So you talk, I'm sure, with local governments and school district officials, and one of the things they are just crying about is that without some relief from state mandates, and in particular from the mandates around public sector bargaining, the Taylor Law, the Triborough Amendment, those things that make it more difficult difficult for them to get concessions out of public sector unions. That really drives the majority of their costs, and those things are difficult to manage, as well as pension costs. And until some of these more fundamental things are addressed, and they're very difficult politically, and they're very difficult from a policy perspective, you know, it's going to really continue to just get more and more pressure on these local governments to stay under the cap.
And by the way, just to kind of give our listeners sort of a broader outline of what the school districts did this year, very few tried to override the cap.
Mm-hmm.
West Irondequoit was one of them as an example, and the only one in the state, I think, that tried and failed.
Mm.
Brighton was able to override the cap and succeeded. So if you're a Brighton resident, you will not be getting one of these rebate checks, because mm-hmm. the state is essentially saying that they want school districts in sort of, I don't know if the governor's used this terminology, but he's essentially saying it's tough for everybody. You have to tighten your belts and be more responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And school districts have said, especially since 2008, 2009, and we've talked about it on this program with the gap elimination adjustment, the state essentially took some of the funding away to school districts during a very understandably difficult time and has not restored that. And school districts are saying without the gap elimination adjustment sort of fixed, there are going to be a lot more school districts next year and the year after and the year after who are forced, in their view, to break this property tax cap, essentially because of mandates. So so for most listeners, most school districts, you will receive that property tax rebate check. And I think it's a few hundred dollars as well on
average.
Well,
I think it's what by it's going to cover the increase that you had to pay.
Okay.
So
mm-hmm.
I think it may be, yeah, probably for most people, I would guess that that's a few hundred dollars.
I
mean, if you have a more expensive house, it's going to be more.
Right. But I'm coming up with that figure because you've got the 350 family mm-hmm. Rebate check, and then the average taxpayer is going to get around $750 combined with the two checks. That's one measure I had seen.
Okay.
But again, it's going to be different for just about everybody.
Right.
So, but that's going to be coming. A lot of people had thought that that would come before the election. It looks like it's coming next month now.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
I'm still waiting to get more confirmation on that.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
So now you're seeing sort of the landscape on how that works. Joe Morelli told us on this program that maybe instead of mailing checks back to people in this form, it could just be applied as a future credit against the taxes you owe. Does that make sense, Erica?
I guess I had thought from the reading that I had done that that is the way this one's going to work in the future. Is that not the case?
Well,
are they still planning to do checks in the future on this one?
I think for now,
mm-hmm.
At
mm-hmm.
least this year, but in the future, mm-hmm. I think it looks like this first year for the family rebate and the school,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get tangible checks
mm-hmm.
again in an election year.
Right.
And then in future years, it's going to be different.
Right, right.
More efficient to do it another way?
Well, you know, I mean, as you've already made the point, I don't know that there's a less efficient way than processing and mailing out all the checks. I mean, I suppose hand delivery would be less efficient, but
ponies,
right.
Actual ponies.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think actually the really interesting questions around this one are more about sort of, you know, just the state's strategy of, you know, if you think of sort of this blob of a system of local government spending and taxes and just applying different lever points to try to bring spending down, which I think is, you know, something that's supported by a lot of people, not everyone by any means. But it just seems to me like it's going to be so difficult unless the state starts to deal with some of the public sector union issues, like I mentioned before. And, you know, that's something that no one wants to talk about. I mean, the governor doesn't want to talk about that. Nobody in the legislature wants to talk about that. Certainly the unions don't want to talk about that. The school districts and the local governments are sort of forced to be the ones saying, like, look, we really got to wrestle with this. But this is a big outstanding issue, is sort of the capacity that we have to continue with the current system and with the increases that are sort of built into it.
One of the things that this conversation makes me think of, Andrea, is the question on specialization for reporters. You know, Erica has spent time on the journalistic side.
A whole lot of time. 20
well,
years now.
You are. But the more your students at RIT mm-hmm. are going into a world where it's going to be more difficult to specialize. I'm not saying nobody specializes, and certainly we're seeing some interesting new or newer media creations, you know, Capital New York and you know, various blog writers who are, I don't know how long they can sustain, but are very specialized mm-hmm. in what they cover. But is there a concern that on these complex issues, people who are graduating into journalism now are so stretched thin doing so many different things that it's hard to specialize? And these issues are complex.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think what we're seeing is, again, the diversification, the necessary skill set for journalists. But then on top of that, I think what we need to do is expand our notion of who should go into journalism. I think a lot of people think, oh, I want to write for a living, so I'll just go into journalism. And the kind of corollary to that is, I hate math, so I'm going to just write. And that's, you know, not fair, and that's not exactly what we need to do, is we need to build that into our curriculum and make people really savvy about that, because the ability to relate numbers in a meaningful way is so important and can be applied to so many different things. So, yeah, I mean, back to your point about specialization is, yeah, there's certain skills, like, again, numbers, I think, is one of those wonderful skills that everybody can apply. But to know what kind of questions to ask when information at face value, everyone talks about information is free and open, and we have so many sources of information. The ability to cut through that and ask those questions and take the time to ask those questions, I think, is a great challenge.
Here's Dave on Twitter saying, we the voters have to refuse to vote for people who choose not to come before us in enough debates or interview give and takes. Jake, who's always one step ahead of me, writes on Twitter, aren't these rebate checks more about media manipulation rather than the voters? You're spending a full hour on the topic. Well, I was going to say you got me there, Jake, but here's why I don't think so. I don't think so because the average taxpayer is too busy to think about what is the best form of tax policy. Mm-hmm. And I'm a taxpayer. I'd like my government to behave as efficiently and effectively as possible. We all have different goals and what we think is appropriate, but I do want to know what's efficient and what's not. And I think these conversations do help sort of elucidate what is and what's not. And on that note, Erica, let's talk a little bit about the questions we've had from listeners about the difference between a tax coming in a rebate check, a tax credit, a tax cut. How do you sort of differentiate?
Well, you could probably apply tax cut as a general term to a lot of those things, but the way I would think of a tax cut is that it's actually a cut in the rates, so that the government...
A permanent cut in the rates, or it could be temporary.
Yeah, We've done that a few times, right? So we're actually lowering the rate at which we're going to tax your income. That's how I would define a tax cut or a tax decrease. A tax credit means we're increasing certain taxpayers, or maybe all taxpayers, but it's usually certain taxpayers' ability to protect some of their income from taxes. So we have deductions, and then we have credits, and all of those are different ways of saying a certain share of your income is going to be protected from taxation. I think I've got that correct. And then these rebate checks are sort of a couple steps removed from that, where we say we're going to define a population that we want to get some money to, and we're actually going to cut checks and process them and mail them out.
Okay. Do economists and analysts tend to cringe at one or the other? I mean, you prefer to see... I was told years ago that economists hate tax credits. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I can't speak as an economist, unfortunately.
Right, so, but you hang out with a lot of economists.
I do. I have very good friends who are economists. I don't think there's a black and white answer on that. I mean, certainly having a logical and sensible tax rate structure would sort of be the basis for a good system. And a lot of people would say we don't have that. And the more credits and deductions and exemptions and loopholes that you add on to that, you're adding inefficiencies into the system. On the other hand, you are providing preferences to certain groups, and you may be targeting certain groups in a way that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, that gets back a little bit to the earned income tax credit conversation that we had. You know, that's a way actually to get income into the pockets of people who have very low income. So we're not just protecting their income from being taxed, we're actually providing income to them. So there wouldn't really be another way to accomplish that, I don't think, except through a tax credit. But certainly, just as we're talking about with the rebate checks, lots of games have been played with tax credits. And it also gets to a level where, you know, the average person can't understand any of this. And you need to hire armies of lawyers and tax preparers to get your money back. And that's where it becomes like sort of a game that only the wealthy can play. And I think that's sort of the fairness argument that comes into play there.
Well, Jen says, all I know is I just got $350 back, and that's what's most important to me.
Exactly.
So there you go. Yeah. So there's one. We have
a positive.
It.
Right. Yay.
And I think I don't blame Jen for feeling that. I don't know Jen, but she's probably very busy. We're all very busy, especially if you're it's unfair for me to say, especially if you're a parent. Everybody's busy for different reasons.
Right.
We're all busy for different reasons. Right. But Jen's point is she didn't have time to think about this. And the state is giving her some of her money back, and she appreciates that.
Right.
And I know
right.
some voters feel that way, and I think that's everybody wants to feel like you're getting as much of your money back or holding on to it as possible. One more quick point for Erica. Brian Kolb, in the interview we had with him earlier this hour, the state Assembly Minority Leader, said that he is uncomfortable with the notion of this being sort of selecting winners and losers,
right,
that this family rebate tax is going too selectively. But governments sort of always select winners and losers.
Yeah,
don't
it's
they?
Funny that you say it that way. I remember when I was in Albany and at the Gannett Bureau, and we would cover the state budget, and one of the sidebars we had every day or every year after the budget was settled was the winners and losers column, who won and who lost. So, yeah, I'm not sure that, you know, selecting winners and losers fundamentally is the problem. It kind of gets back to what I was saying before of what's the rationale, you know, what's the policy objective, how do we defend it? And I think that's what has been a little bit lacking in this case is, you know, why was it families with children? You know, I fall into this demographic bracket. I'm happy to have the money too, but I don't really understand why it was me and not somebody raising their grandkids, you know?
Or somebody who has kids with a combined gross income of $38,000.
Right.
And all of a sudden, they're struggling more than you or I would be.
Sure, absolutely.
And they're out of it. Right. They're out of the bracket for this. So.
And maybe there's a reason for that. I just haven't heard it.
Right, and that's what we haven't been able to get much more explanation.
Just
beyond the sort of the broad platitudes. This is Pete in Rochester. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, because somebody at $350 is probably going to get kicked back into campaign financing. Look, Evan, I would like for you to contact the Fiscal Policy Institute. I believe it was them a few years or several years ago that conducted a study on tax revenue. And the result was that the state was losing out on $20 billion a year of tax revenue as a result of the 30 years of tax cuts on rich people and corporations. Just think of what investments we could make in our communities if that $20 billion was still coming in, and the people that are making money, like the hedge fund managers that are pulling in $1 billion or so a year, would pay even the same amount as somebody making $40,000 a year.
Thanks, Pete. I'm not familiar with that actual study. Eric, are you?
No. I know the group, though, Fiscal Policy Institute. I assume you do as well.
Yeah.
They do a lot of really solid work and analysis. They are certainly coming from a perspective of looking at the impacts on low-income folks and the divide between the rich and the poor. But I don't know that particular study, but it sounds like a lot of the work I've seen them do. So.
I think that's another conversation on where I'm probably going to use an incorrect term. Correct me if I'm wrong. Where the Laffer curve is, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where sort of the diminishing returns on taxation, and and plenty of people feel like the wealthiest are to Pete's point. Pete feels they're undertaxed, and that we haven't reached that Laffer curve. That we can safely tax them more. That it wouldn't hurt employment. That it would, and I think that conversation's sort of ongoing. But it sounds like again, plenty of people feel like Pete to say that this tax policy is misplaced.
Well, I think it's true. There was a comment made earlier, I think by a caller, that the tax structure in our state has flattened, that it used to be more progressive. And I believe that's the case. On the other hand, I think it is also true that our state revenue stream and our state budget is extraordinarily dependent on people with very high incomes and a small group of them, really, headquartered downstate and largely connected with Wall Street. And, you know, our friend E.J. McMahon, who I'm sure you've had on the program with Empire Center for state policy, I may not have that name exactly correct, but has done a lot of also very good analysis and work around and this issue, and certainly makes the point that these are folks that can leave our state.
And the state's
some of
very
them
concerned
have.
About that. That's why you see estate tax and other questions on what people feel does drive them out.
Right.
So it's, Pete, I take
many
the point.
Many sides to those arguments.
Yes, I take the point.
Absolutely.
Andrea, before I let you go, on this broad, all these broad issues, but very complex ones, when you've got students at RIT in journalism and they want to cover these issues well, how do you get started? What do you tell them? Where do you start working to become a better and more effective reporter on this?
Read, I think. Get that background of knowledge before you go in and start asking people questions so you can ask informed questions. If it asks for a leading question, you've got that context to do there. But I think so often the temptation is to respond to the deadline. And college students know deadlines. That, you know, those translate pretty well. But taking that time to read and see what other people are saying and to notice what people aren't saying and think about that access is the biggest advice I'd have.
Erica, are you satisfied with that? It is a loaded question. With the state of our journalism when it comes to fiscal policy and economic matters?
I think it's out there to be consumed. I mean, I certainly would like to see more of it in some cases in some publications. But, you know, newspapers and other outlets are trying to respond to what they understand to be public demand. And the industry has, you know, suffered tremendously in terms of readership and appeal to folks. So it's not an easy scale to try to balance. I don't envy the people that have to work on how to do that.
You're nodding over there, Andrea.
I totally agree. Yeah, yeah. But there's just so many demands in there. And I think people are doing the best that they can. And I think a lot of it, too, is convincing the public that these are really important issues. And, I mean, that's the battle. You know, I can click on this photo of this cat or I can go read the story about tax policy.
Which would you choose?
Right.
Well, there you go. There's the landscape. Cats versus tax policy. Now, I'm glad we've cleared that up. Andrea Hickerson is an RIT professor of journalism in the School of Communications. Thanks for spending an hour with us, Andrea.
Thank you.
Erica Rosenberg is the Associate Director of the Center for Governmental Research. Enjoyed the conversation, Erica.
Thanks so much.
And now you've got a better sense of the $350 checks that are out and what's coming next when it comes to those rebates that are related to the tax cap, the property tax cap, schools, etc. So hope you've appreciated this hour as best we can, as balanced as we can be. Short break, and we're talking about another issue that people might not know about. Have you heard of Narendra Modi? That's next on Connections.